Hello and welcome to the Good Glow Podcast with Martha Beck. This season is brought to you with thanks to Dove's new Advanced Care Body Wash. Get ready to say goodbye to dry skin while feeling more beautiful and confident in your own skin. This week I've been using the deeply nourishing Advanced Care. It smells so good and feels creamy and hydrating. The best thing for me is that it has 0% sulfates, which can attack and irritate your skin. Unlike ordinary body washes, Dove's Advanced Care is made with 24-hour renewing micro moisture. This new technology from Dove deposits millions of tiny moisturizing droplets that, instead of getting washed off, absorb deeply and continuously work with your skin's natural renewal process to strengthen your skin's barrier and help retain and boost moisture even after your shower. So why not upgrade your showers and use Dove's new Advanced Care Body Wash, available now nationwide. So Martha Beck, she's the queen of life coaches. She's worked with Oprah for 17 years. Oprah absolutely adores her advice. She's a Harvard-trained sociologist and a New York Times best-selling author. Martha's been on the Good Glow before. I still get messages about our podcast together. And even Audrey, my best friend, who's not really into life coaching podcasts, says to this day that my podcast with Martha was her favorite episode of the Good Glow ever. So today we're talking about anxiety, comfort zones, purpose. Martha has discovered a way out of anxiety. And since I've recorded this podcast, I've been using her method and I promise it works. So get ready for a life-changing 30 minutes.
Martha Beck, I waited for this day to come around again, or hoped that this day would come around again. Thank you so much for coming back to the Good Glow.
Ah, it's a joy. I'm so happy to be here.
As I was saying before I press record, I think about you all the time, you know, mother pages, doing what makes me feel warm, what makes me feel cold. I actually wrote about that in my book. You know, Martha told me, do what makes you feel warm. And I got a text from a girl the other day who's on holiday with her family, and she wasn't feeling great. And she opened my book on that page, and her little girl came over and said, "Mommy, get into the pool." And she said, "Usually I would say, no, I'm not getting in." And she said, in that moment, I asked myself, what will make me feel warm? And she got in with her family.
Oh, that's so sweet. Oh my goodness. Thank you for telling me that.
Well, thank you. And, you know, just your work is incredible. Where in the world are you, Martha? I don't think I asked you the last time.
I'm in Pennsylvania. I live in Pennsylvania. Yeah. And sometimes a little bit in New York City. So I live half, most of the time I live in the woods in a really old growth forest, like 300-year-old trees that are, you know, completely surround the house. And then sometimes I go to New York City and it's completely different, but I have discovered, to my surprise, equally beautiful and entrancing.
Yeah.
We have a happy little household, and I get up every morning and go right to my studio where I paint, and the world goes away, and then I go for long walks, and then I get to talk to people like you on my computer.
And, you know, obviously, I know your community is so strong and you're helping so many people. And, you know, you have another book coming out, which is just so exciting. The time has come again.
This one's about, it was a response to the worldwide rise in anxiety, because I wrote a book about integrity and how if you're completely in your truth, you stop experiencing psychological pain. And a whole bunch of people came up to me after reading that book and said, "I think I'm in complete truth, but I'm afraid all the time." And for me, it can't be true. I have found that if I sit long enough and examine the structure of any thought that makes me afraid, it always turns out to be untrue. It's not present in the moment. So then I started looking into why this happens so much and why people can be so honest and yet so scared. And I found out a tremendous amount about the way the brain works. And then I found, after reading a ton of stuff, that the opposite of anxiety is not calm, which I'd always assumed it is, but creativity. That the structures in the brain that lead to anxiety are actually only on one hemisphere. And on the other hemisphere, there's a mirror structure, but it takes us into creativity instead of into anxiety. And you can't use them both at once. So Yes, I wanted to write to help people get to calm. And there are a lot of good books that help people do that. But then I wanted to go beyond calm and far, far, far into creativity so that we start creating solutions to the problems that are making people so anxious, right? Creativity is not only an internal solution if you've got problems, it also is the only way out of the problems that are around us. I've loved drawing and painting since I was one, but I haven't let myself do it until now. I'm 61. I think 60 years is long enough to wait. And it's a happy, happy place. And there's no anxiety anymore.
And do you think, Martha, that there is more anxiety in the world we live in its current state? Or has there always been this much anxiety, but we just knew nothing of it?
It's a really good point to make. I think that there's always been a lot of anxiety, but that there actually is more now, that it's actually going up. And the reason is that we're exposed to so much more information, and information that is selected for its impact on our emotions. And the biggest impact on our emotions is usually to make us afraid. Like if you're sitting in a room and all kinds of things are coming through, and then a black mamba comes through, you're going to pay all of your attention to the snake, right? So that's what the news does. And that's what happens when you scroll, that's arguments online. And so people are absorbing an amount of information that is, we absolutely did not evolve to handle. And almost all of it makes us nervous, makes us anxious, even though we won't have to personally grapple with most of it. We're just with floods of anxiety producing information are constantly pouring into our brains right now. And I do think, especially after the pandemic, psychiatrists, psychologists saw a massive rise in anxiety throughout the pandemic. And here's the thing, once it gets started going up, it doesn't go down. Unless you can like disentangle the mechanism. I call it the anxiety spiral. It feeds on itself and gets worse and worse and worse. Actual healthy fear is time slows down. You think very clearly. You know what you're going to do. And shoo, like a ton of adrenaline floods your system. In 90 seconds, it will be gone if the threat is gone. That's normal, healthy fear. If there's any fear that is sustained when there is no harmful actor in the room, that's just sustained by imagination and memory. And it's not the truth of your current situation, but that's kind of a deep concept to teach people. Like if you're just sitting in a chair somewhere and you're really, really scared, you're not in the present moment. You're not in the actual situation. You're in a situation that's been conjured by your mind, and it is not a real situation, but you believe it more than you believe the actual circumstances, which means you believe it instead of believing your truth. So it's I wouldn't call it a flaw. It's a little glitch in the brain that makes people think they're in integrity when in fact they're way out of integrity because they're in anxiety.
Yeah, because I think so many people nowadays will say, I live with my anxiety, I manage my anxiety. They feel like this is almost like a diagnosis of like MS or cancer, like something that they have to, they must carry.
Yeah. And what I would say is, I love my anxiety and take really good care of it. Because if you don't try to fight it or push it, if you get in touch with the part of you that wants to stop feeling so afraid and you really take care of it, it moves out of fear and it takes you into first curiosity and then creativity. So anxiety, once it's really managed, it's just fuel. Anxiety, it's just psychological energy. If you turn it toward light, it will take you there in incredibly powerful ways. So yeah. You can't get rid of your anxiety, but you can totally transform the energy of anxiety into something just wonderful.
Wow. Because last week we were launching our show, which is in the National Concert Hall here in Dublin. And it's a big deal because I'm the type of person, you know, we label ourselves, I know, but I wouldn't have a birthday party for myself. So to to have to sell tickets to 1,000 people to come to a show for me is torture. And how I manage that. So like 2 years ago, I cancelled a show, but this time I knew that my anxiety was so crippling that day, but I was able to say to myself, it is for this day. Tomorrow I will feel better. Is that the right thing to do?
Yeah, you're starting to get it. Yeah. So do something for me. Imagine, get in touch with your anxiety and imagine it as a small animal, like a baby animal. What shows up?
Like a little puppy.
Okay, it's a little puppy and it's like, So that's your anxiety. People think my anxiety is a monster. No, it's like a bunny. That's what So can you imagine picking up this puppy? It's just shaking and trembling, right? And just saying, oh, honey, it's okay. Look around. There's nothing. And really do this right now while we're talking. I hate hypotheticals. I like to really work on it. So just say, and don't ask him what he's thinking. He'll spout a lot of lies. Sorry, I assumed it was male. It could be female. So what does the puppy need?
Reassurance.
Mm. So what would you say to him?
You are just scared right now.
Yeah, but also, you're okay. You'll be
you're
fine.
Okay.
You're all right. Everything's all right. You're good. So when there's something I call, and I've been doing this for decades, but I was too embarrassed to tell anyone. I call it kind internal self-talk. And the acronym is KIST. So what you do is you want to KIST your anxiety. So you get the puppy and you don't say things like everything will go well and we will outsell the ticket, you know, the previous record. Puppies don't get that. It's an animal. So you hold the puppy. And I want you to do this right now, Georgia, if you don't mind. Just imagine like stroking his little furry, her little furry self and just say, oh, sweetheart, we're okay. Look, it's okay. We're all right. You're a good puppy. Good, good, good puppy.
I feel calm.
Know, don't you start to feel like it's, somebody's in charge and they've got me. And the puppy starts to like, And then you can make a little imaginary pouch and the puppy gets to ride in the pouch. And so it'll be safe next to you. You're going to take care of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And just make sure it knows if you ever get scared, I'm right here. I can take care of you.
That's beautiful.
Isn't it simple? It's so simple.
Because I actually, now that we're going through that exercise, I go to Jamie, my partner, to soothe me.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And if he's not feeling it or he's like, I've had this conversation with you 5,000 right. times. I'm like, I need you. Yeah. Actually, we have the power to do that for ourselves.
Yeah. And it's incredible. I mean, I discovered KIST after a 3-day nonstop panic attack. It was the worst experience I've ever had. I moved to the forest and I was meditating like hours a day and just letting everything come up. And then I had just one of these things where all the fear I'd ever felt seemed to sort of mass together and it just grabbed me. I didn't sleep. I didn't eat. I was in full-fledged panic for 72 hours. It was horrible. And I tried all kinds of things. I called friends. I took drugs. Nothing worked. And then I started just doing these Tibetan loving kindness meditations, just saying, may you be well, may you be happy, may you be free from suffering. And my anxiety started going, because everything else I was doing was like, attack the problem. We got to solve the problem. Well, if you start to attack an animal, it gets more scared. So once I just started giving it kind wishes, the amygdala, the little almond-shaped part of your brain that puts you in fight or flight, goes, oh, I found home. Oh, thank God. Oh, here we are. And that's the beginning of living a life without anxiety.
Do you think the more that you do that, will it become lesser and lesser, or is it just you find a faster way to calm down?
I don't just think it. I know from experimental evidence that people who use that meditation, these Tibetan monks who had done years of this, their brains were extremely different from other people's. And the more a monk had been doing those practices, the more different his brain was. In other words, they weren't just different from the get-go. They were making their brains different by doing self-love, self-loving internal self-talk. That's all they did. One guy who had had severe panic attacks as a child, he had spent so much time doing this to get away from his panic disorder. And when they wired up his brain and said, go into a calm state, they literally thought the machines had broken because he was so wired, internally wired for happiness and calm and joy and creativity and celebration. He was like the happiest person in the world. They actually have called him the happiest man in the world. His name is Yonge Mingo Rinpoche. And it came out of panic disorder.
It just goes to show that I suppose for so many of us, we're kind of reluctant to do the work. We're reluctant to maybe open up to a new way of putting in the work because it is hard, I suppose, to actually put these things into practice.
And here's the thing. All I'm asking is that you say things in your mind. If that's hard, then you must be living a very hard life because the only way to be anxious is to constantly say things in your mind. I'm terrified. Oh my God. There's always a stream of verbal thought from the left hemisphere of the brain. And that's what sustains anxiety. So all I'm asking you to do is take the same highly developed ability to say things to yourself and start saying nice things.
Yeah. And when you talk about creativity and, you know, putting energy into that, and that's the opposite of anxiety, is that to go find something that you're interested in? Yes. And is it a case of like when your anxiety is coming up to turn your attention to that?
The first step out of anxiety, once you've calmed yourself, and you will always have to calm yourself because your brain has an inherent ability to be anxious. It will always be able to use that ability, but you can choose to calm it down instead. Once it's calm, you can move from the left hemisphere where the anxiety lives to the right hemisphere where creativity, and these are simplifications, but the first step is curiosity. So the brain, in order to survive, we evolved brains that ask three questions in every situation. First one is, am I safe? If I'm safe, am I loved? Do I have social connections with people that can sustain me? And that can be, you know, a book you read by an author who's not even alive, but there has to be someone, right? If you're safe and you're loved, the next question is, what can I learn? And that is why puppies and kittens and children are always getting into so much trouble. They are really interested in exploring the world. And a toddler laughs 400 times a day. An adult laughs about 15 times a day. And that is not because growing up makes you see reality. It's because in the process of helping you grow up, society steals your joy, does not serve any of the structures of society. And so there was a study designed by NASA to identify creative geniuses to hire for NASA. And they'd give this test and they found that 2% of adults were creative geniuses. Then they give it to little kids and 98% of them were creative geniuses. And the guy who designed the study said, it's the school system. We take people, creative geniuses, who want to just explore and learn, and we put them in school and we say, you are not safe, you are not loved, and you will not look at what's interesting to you. You will do as you are told, young lady.
Can you talk to me about comfort zones? Because sometimes I feel, Martha, that anxiety will put us into a comfort zone. But then sometimes when I feel like, am I in a comfort zone or am I just doing what brings me joy, which is sitting on my couch right now and not facing, you know, the stepping outside and doing something scary. Like I always find the line kind of hard to find there.
Yeah. Yeah. It does feel good to like crunch in and rest when you've been doing something difficult and you need those periods of rest. So that is, I like to say the pattern our lives were designed to follow is that we're meant to play until we feel like resting and then rest until we feel like playing. Ooh, interesting little slip of the tongue. Because it is a very spiritual thing to live for joy. So it is like praying. But playing is very active. And then resting feels restorative. If you are resting because you're afraid to get up, if you feel frozen, that's anxiety. If you feel relaxed and warm and open, that's rest. And it feels quite different.
Wow. Yeah. And that's so simple. But I never thought about it that way.
It's all simple. It's all so simple. And I was trained to be a sociologist. And so when I look at it, it's like, wow, we have a society that, you know, basically colonized the whole globe and then imported a way of living and thinking that is absolutely guaranteed to make us anxious.
Mm.
You know, it's like, how much stuff can you grab? How hard can you compete? How hard can you fight?
Just a short break to thank Dove Advanced Care Body Wash for supporting the Good Glow this season. 2024, it's a big year for Dove. This is their best ever body wash with 24-hour renewing micro moisture. If your self-care needs an upgrade, you can choose to pamper Deeply Nourish, which is the one I was using this week, Hydrate, Gently Scrub, or Revive with 10 gorgeous variants, and I just can't decide my favorite. It's also free from sulfates, very important, has biodegradable ingredients, and is packaged in recycled plastic bottles. So say goodbye to dry skin this season and step out feeling more beautiful and confident in your own skin with thanks to Dove Advanced Care Body Wash.
How can we be like comfortable with enough?
Okay, so you're sitting in a chair. I'm sitting in a chair. Are you comfortable?
Yeah.
Is the room warm enough?
Yeah.
Is there enough light to see and enough air to breathe?
Yes.
Do you love the puppy?
Yeah.
Then you have enough.
Mm.
Now, if you go out and you're hungry and you have no money for food and everything, we'll deal with that situation when it arises. But right now, you and I have more than enough of everything we need to be, which is our only real purpose, is to just fully and completely be human, which means curious and creative and playing until we feel like resting and then resting yeah. until we feel like playing.
Just to hear those words, just a feeling of contentment and gratitude for yeah. all that we have, that sometimes we just get so caught up in the rat race and thinking we need more that yeah. we just can't see the wood yeah. from the trees anymore.
Yeah. The left hemisphere of the brain where all the anxiety lives is just, it just wants to grab things. It just wants to grab stuff. And it's kind of, It creates a cycle of needing and then not being satisfied and needing more. And that's because it's out of balance. We don't need to move into our right hemispheres. When the left hemisphere takes over, it only believes in itself. When the right hemisphere is in charge, when the creative brain is in charge, it includes the whole brain. So it will, like, when you are just the puppy, oh my gosh, I'm nervous. That's in one part of your brain. And when you say, oh, I'm nervous, and I've got you, little one, I've got you right here next to my heart, that's using the whole brain. It's mm-hmm. using the whole nervous system. And the whole nervous system is incredibly wise. And once you tap into it, it just guides you and takes you and gives you ideas and solutions. And it gets very, very magical, really.
Yeah. Because yeah. actually a clip from Oprah came up on my phone the other day, and in it she was saying that often we're going, but actually we don't know what we're doing or where we're going because we've never asked ourselves that question.
There's no destination. Yeah, we're like a ship that has a really powerful engine, but no steering wheel, no charts, and no navigation equipment. We just go until we hit something and it's a disaster. And there's no adventure, really, because you can't choose where you're going. Go! And socially, we're taught that power, wealth, and status are the things we're supposed to go toward. But I have coached for 30 years now, and I've coached billionaires and famous people galore. And there's not a single one of them who said that power, wealth, and status made them feel good. It made them feel like I coached an Olympic gold medalist once, and she said, I felt great when I won the race, but by the time I was on the podium to get my gold medal, I was terrified. What was I going to do now? Because it wasn't enough. And the reason is, it's the King Midas story. You just think you need gold and you turn everything to gold and you're not meeting all your needs. And that's the kind of culture we have. It only feeds material wealth and the power and status that come with it. And it's insane.
If somebody is listening to this and they're like, oh my God, that's me. I've been going, I'm getting up. I'm just mindlessly charging through my life. Mm-hmm. What could they do to reevaluate that?
If you sit down or walk around and find the part of you, like look inward and find the energy of driving. My name for the thing that drove me, the part of me that drove me was Fang. And it just was like, it was kind of like a wolf, and it just ran and ran and ran and ran. So find whatever is driving you and begin to offer it kindness. How are you, Fang? Wow, you have really been driving a long time. You must be very tired. Okay, you can keep running. Just notice how tired you are. And just you just begin to understand your own anxiety from a place of love and compassion and start extending that. And automatically the whole brain comes online. And the essential, what I call the essential self, comes online. And it is infinitely compassionate and absolutely devoid of fear. So it holds the fear. Mm. It never tries to destroy the fear because it never destroys anything. And it never tries to exclude the fear because it never excludes any part of you. All of you belongs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's lovely. Because I think one of the questions I'm asked most often is from people who say, I don't know what my purpose is. And it's almost like having anxiety about not knowing what your purpose is can take over your life.
Yep. That is the number one problem people bring to me. You'd think it would be something about, I don't know, career or relationship. Nope. Sense of purpose is absolutely the top thing. And there's no, in our society, having a sense of purpose is not valued. It's not something we're taught. You need to go get your sense of purpose. In fact, we're sent the other way. As soon as you start to love the part of you that is driving you in anxiety, as it calms down, you begin to notice what makes you say, huh, what's that? What's that? What's that over there? Oh, okay. And you become like a little search engine. And you end up finding out what interests you and what lights you up. And that is always the same as your purpose. When I had my brain mapped when I was like 40, they said, well, you have really bad ADHD. I'm sure it's made it very hard for you to in school. And I was like, well, I think I'll just keep going to Harvard and deal with that on my own time. But I said, what does that mean? And they said, you have an interest-based attention system. I said, what does that mean? They said, you pay attention to things that interest you. And they said, but we can treat it with medication and therapy. And I was like, what the hell do other people pay attention to? Like, I don't know. How do you even decide what to do for breakfast? And they were like, no, you need to be able to focus all your attention on what is optimal. And I was like, and who defines what is optimal? And it's always sort of the faceless conglomeration of social assumptions around us. And thank God I was given a divergent brain that is just like, I'm sorry, that does not interest me. I will not pay attention to it.
Yeah.
And I wish we were all a bit more like that.
Yeah, like that's a gift.
That's the way to your purpose, just curiosity. Just whatever interests you is your purpose.
It's so interesting because I'm doing a Chopra's meditation course at the moment. Mm. And they explained it in the course that your purpose is something you would do if you had all the money in the world and you were safe every day and you had no worries. What would you do? And I said to Jamie, my husband, the other day, I said, what? I asked him that question and he said, I would bring people on tours, like sports tours, which is what a huge side of our business is, bringing people to half marathons and challenges. And I was like, you're doing it. You're living exactly. your purpose. That's amazing. But it's something I find that people really struggle, or they beat themselves up about it a lot.
Yeah. And because they've imported a lot of social conditioning, sometimes in their family, sometimes in their ethnic group, their religion, just society in general, that say you're supposed to be driving toward material wealth and certain things that impress other people. And that just gets us stuck in this little, tiny, drab little circle of, I hope to please other people. I hope people admire me. There's a certain American ex-president, I will not name him, but he has literally, I've heard, he has someone who walks around with him while he's golfing and reads positive things people say about him online constantly. Okay, oh, wow. That's someone serving the social, who needs social reinforcement all the time. Mm. A person who's actually on purpose never needs that kind of propping up. There is such joy. There's so much joy in the doing of the thing that interests you. And you can become so good at it. Like, human beings have the capacity to do things like, you know, play piano concertos, or, you know, like, sorry, concerti. It's what we can do with these brains. We have changed the climate of a planet. We need to change it back if we want to stay alive. But the wonder of it is we can. But if we keep being afraid and doing what society is telling us to do, no, we'll just feed the fire that never warms anyone and stay anxious all our lives. And I don't want that for the world.
Yeah. And just one more thing on purpose. Do you think people need, does purpose need to be their full-time job, or can it be something they do on the side?
What happens, and I've watched people over and over, is that you start to do a few things that interest you, and then it starts to grow. And then it starts to grow, and then it gets bigger, and then it gets bigger. And there's a jumping off point where you say, I think I could do this for a living. It's a point of absolute terror, and you must go through it, right? You must keep going and see what you can do on the other side. Don't give up your day job, because there's a whole chapter in my book about how we're more likely. Here's the thing. The lives we live now are based on a factory model of productivity. But the way we can make a living out of our purpose, don't think factory, think forest, think ecosystem, think all the things that interest you. This is my ADHD. I'm interested in a whole bunch of different things that seem totally unrelated. But when you put together things that seem totally unrelated and you're passionate about it, people go, huh? And they will pay you to either do it or teach them how to do it. And that is the way I've made my living. And I've watched dozens and dozens of other people do the same thing. Yeah. Economic ecosystems. That's what comes to support us when we are living our purpose.
Oh, I love it. Just when you're saying there about anxiety and like befriending that side of you and being gentle and nice and accepting, I already feel different. Like, it feels like physically, it feels like a dropping of the shoulders, because I think so when you were speaking about that, I was picturing myself lying in my own bed at night. Mm. And because I think that's when the limiting beliefs come in to me, and probably to so many people. When you're in bed, you're like, oh God, oh God, oh God.
Mm-hmm. I know, the safest place in the world. And we're so panicked, right?
Yeah. But actually, now when I think of myself in bed and I think of being nice to that side of myself instead of resisting it or pushing it away or thinking it's there, there's something wrong with me, nope. To actually be loving and compassionate to that. Yeah. It feels really nice.
My first dog was a beagle, and beagles are very social. They're also dumb as a bag of hair, but they're very, very social. And I loved that dog with my whole soul. And you're not supposed to, like, little puppies, beagle puppies have to be at eye level with humans because they have to have a pack. They have to. So I tried to let him sleep somewhere else, and he would howl and howl. And then one day I just gave in. I mean, why do I have to separate him from other beings? That's just a social convention. So I let him climb in bed. Here is this soft, beautiful, velvety little puppy. And we cuddled up together and we went to sleep. And that is how I treat my anxiety.
So beautiful. I cannot wait for this book. So it's out in January. Do you have a whole book tour and everything happening?
It's more, I have some physical book touring doing, but you know, the online thing is pretty awesome, as we found out during the pandemic. So it's podcasts like yours that I really, that excite me.
Oh, that's amazing. And thank you so much. And like, I log onto your Instagram lives all the time and listen to your podcast and cannot wait for this book. Just before we go, can you leave us with a mantra or something from your book, even a sentence that sticks out or something you could share with us?
The first thing that always comes to mind when people ask me that question is a line from Goethe, which is, when you trust yourself, you will know how to live. And it really is that deep trust that even your anxiety is good in its pure intent, and that you can love all the parts of yourself. That's when you really trust yourself. And all those parts that were once anxious will teach you how to live in a way that is beyond anything you could ever imagine. It's wonderful.
Wow. What a absolutely perfect ending to the podcast. Thank you so much, Martha.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Keep up the wonderful work.
Well, what do you think of that? Martha Beck's new book, Beyond Anxiety, is available for pre-order now, and I've left a link in the show notes. So when I was editing this podcast, I was having a little bit of anxiety beforehand, and Jamie came back from a meeting and I said, I actually feel better. Putting Martha's tips into place actually works. So if you have someone in your life who you think might need to hear this podcast, please send it on with love from me, and hopefully it helps them as it helped me. So the September Reset is back in less than a week. It's a 14-day challenge, 10 minutes a day. I want to help you pause, take stock, evaluate your life, make way for new energy, let go of stress and overwhelm, and make space for the life you want. If you'd like to join us, I'll just read out a little review from last year, completing this September Reset course has been life-changing. I learned so much about myself with lots of light bulb moments, and that's exactly what the September Reset is all about. So the early bird offer is available now just for a few more days. I'll leave a link in the show notes. And if you want to join us for a boogie this Christmas, live Christmas music, we're turning the National Concert Hall into a winter wonderland. Inspiring talks, amazing guests, live music, and so much festive cheer. We'll be in the concert hall on December 1st. It's a Sunday. It's at 5 o'clock, which means you can go for your brunch beforehand or dinner afterwards. This is going to be a Christmas party to remember. Tickets in the show notes. I'll talk to you next week.